This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Just a quick one today. Just 1 hour program to give way to the Jays facing off against the Phillies. George Springer still batting leadoff, Manny?
Yep. How's that working?
Over to Blair and Barker for that one. They had a good whack at that pinata yesterday.
Have fun, boys.
Woo! Okay. When's the road trip over?
Tomorrow, I think.
Dun, 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 dun.
Or today, I don't know.
Dun, 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 dun.
I got hockey on the brain. I can't follow that.
All right. Congratulations to the San Jose Sharks. They win the NHL draft lottery yesterday. They will select Macklin Celebrini at the Sphere in Vegas in the last NHL draft of its kind, well, at least for a while, unfortunately. I'm one of those guys. Jason Bukla has been all over this. He's all over our prospects, whether it's with his pro hockey group or whether it's with the NHL on Sportsnet. And he has his most recent piece out on the top 18 prospects that you might be, whose names you might be hearing called come June. And no surprise, Macklin Celebrini is number one, playing for Boston University. He is the, how do we describe Macklin Celebrini? I mean, is he a Connor McDavid? No, he's not a Connor McDavid, but he does come in and he reshapes your organization. He reshapes your franchise. This is going to be a home run for the San Jose Sharks, both on and off the ice. Always good. You know, even though he's a BC boy, obviously a lot of formative years spent in the Bay Area, where his dad, was employed by the basketball team. And so it's the local boy does good and comes home story, which always doesn't always work, but this is the one that the San Jose Sharks needed. Jason Bukla joins me now. Books, how are you, pal?
Jeffrey, how are you today?
I'm good. So when we found out yesterday it was San Jose, I think we all pretty much had the same reaction. I'm curious if you had a similar one. This is the right ending for the season for the San Jose Sharks. It was painful. It was awkward. I think Mike Greer probably told the owner of the team, yeah, we're going to be bad. But I didn't know. I don't know if Mike Greer told the owner, Hasso Plattner, they were going to be this bad. But then they really leaned into it and said, look, if you're going to miss heaven, don't miss it by 2 inches. There's a reward if you're really bad. There's a reward if you're really good. That's called the Stanley Cup. And they are rewarded with Macklin Celebrini. Your thoughts on when you found out it was San Jose yesterday?
Well, first off, it was probably the most, I don't want to say boring, but I mean, honestly, what a half hour of TV, right? Let's just run through the list and go right to the top without any drama.
Yep.
This is a great story, Jeff, for the San Jose Sharks. And they needed this, didn't they, with the current state of the franchise. You know, with his dad obviously working there in Golden State with the Warriors, and, you know, they're settled in the Bay Area. And then Macklin, obviously, you know, he's by far the top prospect in this draft class.
Yep.
And this is a huge launch forward for the Sharks. And you know, I'm curious to see what the trickle-down effect of it is as well. You know, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are. Like, Will Smith, what's he do now, right?
So let me just pause on that one for 1 second, because I opened the show and mentioned that, and I asked, you know, talked to Greg Wyshynski about this, and, you know, there's no... You know, even Macklin Celebrini will talk about, well, you know, we haven't had the conversation. Yeah, there's no – he's playing with the San Jose Sharks next year.
For sure.
You do wonder, to your point, last year's first round pick for the San Jose Sharks, fourth overall, Will Smith. Do we see someone come out of BU and BC to start in the NHL next season? What's your gut tell you about that one, Boogs?
I think it's going to happen. That's my gut. I mean, a couple of things I always think about when I look at players like this who are coming into the league at a young age. First of all, as you and I both know, when you hit sort of entry level stardom, if you will, your entry level deal is what it is. But bridge deals they don't exist anymore, Jeff, the way that they did, you know, even 5 years ago. Like, these guys are getting paid sooner than later. So these athletes, when they come into the league now, even if it's just in San Jose, two guys going to the same franchise, I feel like they want to get a leg up on the competition, if you will. You know what I mean? Like, get in the door first and start their clock. I believe that Celebrini is going to follow Fantilli, you know, like, you know what Fantilli did last year in Michigan. So he's coming out. And then my gut tells me Smith too. And I'm going to tell you, that changes the landscape of the San Jose Sharks in the middle of the ice and on their power play exponentially, like, immediately. Are they going to be a great team out of the gates next year? No. Are they going to be, you know, that much better the year later? You know, a little bit, but it's going to take time. But these two guys are cornerstones to build around.
You know, you you always hear, you know, you win Stanley Cups down the middle. I'm a big, you know, default to the blue line first. That's always been my bias. I always go to the blue line. But, you know, let me ask you this one. What are the San Jose Sharks getting in Macklin Celebrini here? Like, I was trying to position before you came on, like, who is he? What is he? Who do you compare him to? What kind of impact can you expect? Is it a McDavid impact? Is it a Bedard impact? Like, what are the Sharks getting here?
So for me, they're getting a combination of several different styles of players. So let me, I'm sure you already did it, but for me, when I go scout the kid, there's certain things that I have to identify, even if you're a star player, right away when I walk in the building. So the first thing is obviously relentless compete. And that's like, this kid's an exceptional competitor. Like, yeah. He works. Speed, you know, I'm not just talking quickness out of the gate. I'm not talking just your first three steps. I'm talking about, can you separate in between the blue lines? Can you track back the full 200 feet to check back when you're dog tired in the offensive zone? He ticks off that box. And then offensively, you want him on the flank ripping pucks? Sure, I can do that. Do you want him to potentially win key faceoffs in set plays in any zone? Yeah, I'm going to do that. So he's got a combination of like a Jonathan Toews, a little bit of MacKinnon in him, and then, you know, I don't want to say Patrick Kane, but, you know, like a combination of a bunch of different players. I think he's close to a complete player. Like, I think this is a guy that can kill penalties in the NHL. He's that smart. And he's 190 pounds. Like, he's not a lightweight. Like, this guy competes. So yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how he fits in with the men's team for Team Canada. That's a little different, isn't it, compared to Bedard last year, who yep. didn't go over. That's a little bit of a different strategy, which also tells me that he's going to turn pro next year.
Getting ready for the pro game. You know, just as an aside here, so last year, Connor Bedard, this year, Macklin Celebrini. I think everybody's drooling about Gavin McKenna as well, and he's a couple of years away. We just saw what happened to the U18s as he just completely, you know, demolished that tournament. What's happened out west? You know, out west, well, for the longest time was looked at, you know, they could always develop like really good players, solid NHLers, but where's the stars? Like, how come the West isn't making stars? Well, now the West is making stars. And I'm trying to figure out, is it just because, you know, the rise of academies there? I don't know what it is. Books, you have a thought on why we're seeing now at the high, high end of the draft, we're seeing studs come out of the West?
We certainly are. I'm a belief that academy model has gotten ahead of some of the structure elsewhere in Canada.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got, you and I both have had kids come through the system. You're still involved in it here in Ontario. There's still a lot of moving parts, isn't there, in Ontario yeah. and in Quebec, for example. Unless you go that prep school route in Quebec, like, you know, their AAA hockey is. But out west, that academy model has taken hold and it's starting to produce some very, very elite players. And I believe that you're bang on. It's the structure. It's the commitment to a process, whether it be in the classroom, obviously on the ice. And I'm not just talking practices. I'm talking about developing, like working on singular skill sets and improving attributes that have to go to another level for you to become, whether it be a WHL player, a NCAA player, I don't care, like name it, eventually an NHL player. So isn't it closer in my books to feeling like, you know, the U.S. model, even, you know, how the U.S. model is yep. really taken off with all the structure. And I kind of feel like Western Canada is picking an apple off the same sort of tree.
You know, that's interesting that you mentioned and you phrase it that way, because, you know, I was having a conversation with someone stateside not too long ago, and we're having this conversation about, you know, developing players, and we're talking about the rise of USA Hockey. And this person said to me, like, look, like we have for every single sport, we have an infrastructure and fully funded, you know, resource heavy to create elite level athletes. He said, what you have in Canada, you produce accidental elite level athletes because you don't have that channel the way that we do in the States. Like, it's just like, listen, we all understand the difference in, you know, resources and money and all those things that, you know, the United States can provide for their athletes, whether it's hockey, football, track and field, baseball, whatever, that we don't have in Canada. But to hear you talk about this model of developing superstars and elite level athletes, that's the way to compete with the American model, where every single year, and you know, Books, you're at all the ranks, they are cranking out elite after elite after elites. Are we maybe starting to see the end of Canada only producing accidental superstars just because they're the best athletes that pick, you know, the most popular sport in Canada?
Well, let's just look at the World Junior experience this year. And I know that that's like a, you know, a high level observation on the world stage. But I personally feel in my, this is like, you know, going back to my Sault Ste. Marie days, you know, I've seen it all, Jeff, just like you, like we bumped through the junior ranks, you know, I've seen it all. And I feel like right now, more than ever, we're chasing success on the world stage, hoping for success. It used to be a given that we would have a certain degree of success. And yes, it comes in ebbs and flows, depending on, you know, obviously the pandemic. Like, we can make a whole bunch of excuses, but the world went through the same thing at the same time.
Yep.
The structure around the world, including the club system in Europe, like, you know how that works over there. Like, when you jump into the club system in Europe, it's a lot like what they're doing in the U.S., developing, you know, that structure and their programs over there. And we're seeing a lot of elite level European players, aren't we? Like, a lot come over here. Finland, Sweden, for example, Swiss, Germany's on the rise. So I really do feel like we need a reset here. It would take a long time to strategize it, but I do think it's kind of hit it in hope sometimes, you know, right now we got a lot of talent, you know, sooner than later, and it's kind of getting there right now.
Yeah.
These other models have caught up to us for sure. And they're going to go by us.
You know, you've talked about this. Sam has talked about this as well. The idea that, you know, there's a drop after 20, somewhere in that range in this year's draft. But we're talking about the high end here, and San Jose Sharks win the lottery. They'll select first, Blackhawks second, Anaheim Ducks third, then Columbus and Montreal. Man, that's pretty similar to last season. But anyhow, what other names should we pay attention to? Like, you've got a really nice piece up, 18 prospects that could be lottery picked. Who else, you know, for all these teams, if you're a Hawks, Ducks, Jackets, Habs, maybe throw Utah in there as well. If you're a fan of these teams, what names should you be acquainted with?
So first thing on my piece is that because I'm not at the end of the year yet, like, you know, I haven't gone to the combine, I haven't finished everything. So this isn't their mock draft. This is where I sit right now. If I was going to the floor tomorrow, best player, best slot. So this is how I feel about it. So obviously Celebrini, he's gone. The next guy on my list is Ivan Demidov from SKA. He's absolutely a dynamic. So last year, there's a lot of noise about Michkov, right? Yep. How good a player Michkov was. This guy is, if Michkov's himself, this guy's Michkov heavy. If you get my drift, like, he's 30% better than Michkov.
You think he's better than Michkov?
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Wow. Better than Michkov. Okay. His interior extension, like, so not only does he have skill off the rush, his read and react, little things that you look for in games, you know, like when the puck is transitioning from down below the goal line in your zone and a guy's coming off for a change, his read and react game, hopping on the ice and going to open space, it's a little thing. I know it's a nerdy thing to say, but he reads the ice all the time. He's engaged all the time. Hmm. He extends plays below the goal line. You know, even when he played in the KHL games, like, he was F1 on it, you know, bumping to extend plays. That's not Michkov. Michkov's more of a, you know, a skill perimeter. Listen, he's a great skill guy too, don't get me wrong, but Demidov's just different. So I've got him second on balance. The curious one there is of course the Russian factor.
Yeah.
He's only got 1 year left on his deal right now, Jeff, but that is SKA. And you and I both know SKA is a very rich franchise.
Yes.
And they like to keep their own. So that's going to be something that the team that selects them is going to have to do a lot of due diligence. But if you go to the Levshinov kid, the right shot D out of Michigan State after that, like 6'2", 208. I mean, I was able to see him live at State, but also Sammy and I went to Michigan for one of those big rivalry games, Michigan State at Yost. I mean, this kid, he just wants to extend plays, make plays. He pinches down. There's a little bit of risk-reward to him, but he's so big and strong that when he gaps up timely in the neutral zone, he doesn't really have to hit anybody. They just kind of bounce off him. He's so big and strong. So you're getting a transitional two-way D, Levshinov, right shot D. You know how valuable they are. He's three.
Yeah.
You're going to get into, you know, there's going to be an argument made over the Siliev kid, who's a defensive defenseman. I dropped him a little bit further down my list because I was going for the offense. Like, I feel like like there might be another Cilia in on the horizon, but it's hard to get a Zane Parekh, who's like that power play quarterback who makes all those plays. Those guys are harder to find, I believe. And then you get into Teej Aginla. Like, what a riser. Like, unbelievable. He went from 10 to 5 on my list so far anyways. We'll see where it lands here at the end of the year. But, I mean, his playoff went to another level. And then here's a guy, right? Here's an academy guy coming out of – we talk about academies and structure. Here's an example of it. And I know he's got the bloodline, so don't get me wrong. He's still got to play the game.
He's had such a tremendous year with Kelowna and really distinguished himself. And you're right. Like, there's always those players at the beginning of the season, like, yeah, okay, where are they going to end up? And Teej Aginla, and for those that don't know, listening and watching right now, that's Jerome Aginla's son. And the pressure is going to be on at 9 if he's available there for the Calgary Flames. But here becomes the question. Do you think he'd still be there at 9? Or has he moved up that if Calgary wants to do this, they have to trade up?
Yeah, they have to trade up. My gut tells me that the Montreal Canadiens, and this is just how I think they would strategize it, Montreal's flush on the back end. They got a ton of prospects coming, right? So actually, they have arguably too many on the back end, if that's possible. But anyways, I digress. I think that they're going to be staring at like a Caden Lindstrom or a Teej Aginla at 5. Like, I really do believe that. You know, do you go for the size and the power of the Lindstrom, who's going to be, he leans goal scorer more than, you know, distributor? Or, you know, Teej does everything. And Jeff, I'm going to tell you something about Teej. This isn't a one-trick pony. This is a 200-foot player. Like, he works his, you know, what's off and, you know, plays hard, and he's really evolved. And as the games got super hard in the back half of the season, he's carried teams on 3 points in the gold medal game for Canada. So he doesn't get the 9 is what I'm telling you. They would have to trade up to make that happen. I don't know in this draft if that's – I wouldn't have the appetite for it personally. If I were drafting in the top 6 or 7 or 8, I wouldn't take a call on it, because the draft class for me personally, I don't value another late round first or middle second round pick the way I have in the past.
Real quick, let me ask you about one other team here, and that is Utah, formerly Arizona. First of all, do you know if we're going to see the matching suits anymore at the draft table, the way we used to watch with the Arizona Coyotes, or is that maybe a thing of the past though, Books?
I hope it's a thing of the past. I'll tell you right now, I would have been the outlier, because if you would have told me that I had to get dressed up in the same costume as everybody else, that's not happening, pal. But anyways, we'll see.
meet the Beatles. Beatles come to America. All wearing the same. Anyhow, This is an organization that already, like we all know, is like loaded with prospects. I had about 60 seconds for this. What do you see Utah doing here in their first go around, drafting 6th overall by way of the lottery last night?
So Utah, first of all, outside of even the first round pick, they've got tons of picks. So I think they're going to be aggressive, trying to package things, punt things down the road, or, you know, even move up with some of their other picks. I believe that. Second of all, I think that they're going to, you know, I think they need a defenseman who's going to be able to be a pure power play quarterback down the line. They've got a ton of prospects up front, don't they? Like the Cooleys and some of these other, well, they've already, I mean, their power play can be ridiculous as it is, but I think that they need to go, you know, instead of having Durzi out there in the next couple of years or somebody in that ilk, you're looking at a Zane Parekh.
Zane Parekh. That as I'm hearing you talk, all I'm hearing in the back of my head is Saginaw Zane Parekh, Saginaw Zane Parekh. That's where Books is going here. Great stuff. Encourage everyone to read Jason Buchla's latest at sportsnet.ca. Thanks, man. And we'll check back plenty between here and by the time we get to the Sphere.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, guys. Have a great day.
There he is, the great Jason Buchla from the NHL on Sportsnet. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook about local Oilers and the Canucks that finally...
Yeah.
We get to see these two teams mix.
Yeah. Oilers -1.5, the odd road puck line favorite, which we don't get very often, especially in a game one. Both teams well rested. As we know, the Canucks won all 4 meetings this season. However, 3 were within the first month of the season.
All early.
And the Oilers were broken. We expect Artur Shelovs versus Stuart Skinner. Skinner, 1-4 lifetime in 6 games against the Canucks, with a goals against average of .404 and a save percentage of 855.
I'll tell you,
no bueno.
This is a series where, as you've mentioned, you take all the head-to-heads from earlier in the season, all you just like throw it all away.
You have to
throw it all away. This is, I'll tell you what, this is a series that I wonder if it comes down to third line? And if you're the Vancouver Canucks, who do you consider the center on your third line? Is it Elias Pettersson? Oh. Like, because listen, like we know who's going to be going up against Connor McDavid and going up against Leon Draisaitl. Does this come down to if the first two lines wash,
mm-hmm.
could, and again, it's going to be real tough, obviously, to shut down Connor McDavid, try to shut down Leon Draisaitl. It is going to be so much fun to watch JT Miller go head to head with Connor McDavid, as we all expect. Like, this is going to be so much fun game within a game. But what if it comes down to third line versus third line here?
Well, it also depends on what happens with the Oilers and who's in and who's out, right? Like, if Adam Henrique is not playing, that changes the way things look as well.
Totally does.
So I think it's going to be who can stay the healthiest in this series, because they're close.
Who can stay the healthiest, and can Vancouver stay disciplined enough not to hand the Edmonton Oilers three or four power plays a game?
And here's the other one, Jeff. Can the Oilers win another series with Connor McDavid scoring one goal?
It's funny, too, because they seem quite comfortable winning 2-1 games now.
Totally different team. One goal, and you're like, oh, the Oilers probably lost in the first round. Nah. No, still had 12 points.
That was a bajillion assist. Okay, that was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. And that is it for us today. Just a one-hour program. Stay tuned. It is the Jays facing off against the Phillies. Jordan Springer leads off. Comma again. I think I've only mentioned it three or four times on a hockey show. Not that I'm hanging on to it or bitter about it. Happening to my Jays. We're back tomorrow, noon Eastern, across the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcast. Have a great afternoon.